hell are we?
Lieutenant Stamets is non-responsive.
Tyler.
You have to tell the captain.
Did you want all of this to happen?
You can't hurt me anymore.
Red alert! Shields up!
The enemy is here.
Transfer complete.
Welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge...
This is Tyler Orton, holding his horses.
And we have a very special guest here representing the Terran Empire, Taylor Ramon.
Taylor!
Hi!
Thank you for coming on the show. We're so glad to have you here tonight.
Thank you for having me.
So, new guest. So, this is our kind of ritual with a new guest. We want to know, maybe, what was your favorite Star Trek series just kind of growing up? Because Discovery, I don't know, maybe it's surpassed all the others that you're used to. But tell us a little bit about your Star Trek history here.
I grew up watching Star Trek with my mom.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, growing up as a child of the late 80s, early 90s, Next Generation was around everywhere.
Yeah.
And, eventually, I remember Space Channel during the early 2000s, or maybe even a little bit later, they'd run like every episode of Star Trek in chronological order. And that's when I started falling in love with, and I remember watching Voyager in my teens as well. And then I started falling in love with the other ones like Deep Space Nine that was often overlooked, original series stuff, and then Enterprise when that came out. And I loved Enterprise at the time. So maybe I'm one of those very few people who's really like, you know what, give it a chance, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
It was slow and a lot of people still hate on it, but I still, you know, nobody's ever watched Star Trek before, it serves as a decent introduction to like the universe.
Cam was the one that convinced me to go back and do Enterprise, and I do appreciate that, Cameron. Mm.
So do you hold up like Enterprise as like your Trek? Because everyone kind of has the one that they say is their go-to.
Oh, maybe. I
like, if you're on a desert island and you can only take one series with you, what is the one you're taking?
Oh, you know what? I would take Deep Space Nine.
Deep Space Nine, okay.
Because, I mean, like, I think that you really get into the more serialized instead of the episodic sort of storylines there. And the character development is a lot more involved than a lot of the other series, I think. And I appreciated that the most. I've done a rewatch of almost all of them recently, and... yeah, Deep Space Nine was definitely one of the ones that stood out as always a favorite.
Right. Yeah.
We should mention Deep Space Nine just celebrated its 25th anniversary last week.
Yes.
And Cam, what did we do to honor it? We forgot.
We didn't do anything.
Yeah.
But you know, I was hoping for like a Tarok Nor shaped cake.
No.
That'll come later. But we are going to review the Star Trek Deep Space Nine 25-year documentary that's coming out later this year, What We Left Behind. So
for sure,
that'll be our nod to it. And for all those non-Canadians out there, there were these epic Space Channel marathons that, if it's Thanksgiving or Christmas, they just air like, 24 hours worth of Star Trek reruns. And it was just kind of amazing. Like, I always love those. So I'm with you on the Space Channel, Taylor.
But even like every day you could get up between like, it'd be like from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m. It'd be, you know, original series, Next Gen, and everything in just chronological order. And that was just really cool.
My old roommate and former guest on the show, Tom Ball, used to do that too. He used to tape the episodes that were going like all day long, and he just had this like endless run of TNG and original series episodes.
Yeah,
and he could just watch anytime.
Mm-hmm. So, Taylor, what do you think so far of Star Trek Discovery, though? Like, what is maybe, tell us maybe what your favorite episode, we're 9 episodes in at this point, or I guess 10 right now. So tell us, 10 episodes in, what's your favorite?
Oh, okay. So
we're putting you on the spot.
Oh,
right
yeah. You know,
and
you're
I hope you've memorized every single episode
every
title.
Every single episode title.
Yeah. Or you could just describe it for us.
Yes. It's definitely the one where they are stuck in a Groundhog Day situation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Right. What was that called?
Magic to make the sanest man go mad.
There you go. Yeah. They, okay. To be fair, the episode titles on Discovery are insane. And
they
like
are.
In Latin, and, you know, I understand Latin at a basic level. So I'm like, oh, that's cool. But it immediately goes goes right out of my brain.
Right.
So yes, that was, I loved that episode. I loved it. It was, it showed like the human heart of Discovery that they haven't really shown as much. It's been like, you know, in all the other series, you get to know the characters and you get to get a really good glimpse of their like emotional struggles and stuff. And it's just been, Discovery's been very dark in tone. Yes. So I think that's the only one that has like a, maybe a little bit of brevity in it. Mm-hmm. That I really, really enjoyed. I think that's been my favorite one so far, and Bringing Back Mud. So
right,
yeah,
that's been my favorite at this point as mm-hmm. well. Cam, I think is it Into the Forest I Go?
That three of no, my favorite is still Magic to Make the Saints Men Go Mad. Yeah, mm-hmm. And I would say Into the Forest I Go is probably second.
Okay,
yeah,
for excellent. Sure. So Cam, what are we tackling tonight? Now
we're gonna talk about, I guess, the second half of season one, the premiere, Despite Yourself.
Cam, is it true? Are we actually in the Mirror Universe after months and months of rumors of this?
Well, it's a little ambiguous, but it seems so. Yeah.
Guys, I just have to say, I was a little bit wary of going back to the Mirror Universe so soon into the run of a series, like whether or not this would be kind of the fun adventure that we usually get from these little adventures into the Mirror Universe.
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys. I was absolutely delighted by what we got to saw, this kind of world building that we've experienced at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, we, every episode, connect this Discovery episode to an episode of the podcast we did in the past. And for this one, I think it's pretty obvious. We're going to tie it to, should Star Trek return to the Mirror Universe?
Yeah.
And
yes.
This was a
yes.
Yeah.
Well, this was a very like a heated debate we had about back and forth as to like, should it? I don't know. Like, maybe it's used up. Maybe it's worn out its novelty. And I think this episode did a really good job proving that there's plenty left to do.
I mean, were you lamenting the loss of Ensign Connor? You know, back in the premiere episodes, Taylor, are you just like through the roof at the sight of this Captain Connor now?
Ooh, I'm so glad he's dead. Okay. I was just like, I hate his smarmy face. I hope he dies. Right. And then he did. So that's good. Oh, yeah. I was going
to
say...
That's what I said to him in Las Vegas.
Oh, I hope you die. On the show? Yeah.
Awkward.
Yeah.
But how are you enjoying this return to the Mirror Universe, Taylor?
Oh, okay. So I think it's quite interesting when you think of it from like a perspective of war. Mm. So, I mean, we know that eventually, because, you know, it's a prequel, that the Federation comes out on top of this war, or they come into an armistice.
Spoiler.
what? I mean, so it's kind of interesting that, I mean, they've introduced this new technology that we've never heard of, but also I think that, you know, given what Lorca is willing to do to win the war, going into a mirror universe and possibly bringing back technology like the a reverse of what happened initially, might actually, like, that might be his best tactic.
Are you suggesting that Lorca was the one that wanted to go into the Mirror Universe? It wasn't just a random accident?
I thought that was known by now. I guess that's still, like, hinted at. There's some people that might not have picked up on his little misdirection
on the
last episode.
They didn't really touch on that in this episode, which surprised me. I thought they were going to make it a little more explicit.
Well, I mean, they did bring up the part where they're like, oh, we need to go through the logs and see what happened. He's like, no, we don't need to do that. And they're like, oh, yeah, okay. No, we have no reason to do that. It's going to be discovered. No pun intended, eventually.
But for those that may not recall, right before they went and did that last spore jump, you do see Lorca on his personal panel just doing a system override on the coordinates.
Yeah.
And it's a very short glimpse. You really have to be paying attention to this. But yeah, it looks like it was Lorca's plan to go into this mirror universe. Why? Well, maybe there are some other hints that his days in Starfleet are numbered if he ever went back to that starbase 46, I believe.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Can we talk a little bit about the aesthetics of their take on the Mirror Universe? Because I think if you look at Enterprises in Mirror Darkly, or if you look at Mirror Mirror from the original series, it was pretty dang fun.
Yeah.
Deep Space Nine wasn't nearly as imaginative, unfortunately, just in my humble opinion here.
There was definitely less, like, belly top uniforms,
right,
which I appreciated. I don't know, like I like their uniforms.
Well, I came dressed with my midriff showing tonight in anticipation of this episode, so I guess I know where Taylor stands on my particular attire.
I think you look good though.
Thank you.
Mirror Universe Kira was definitely kind of had like the sexed up sort of look, but yeah, most of the rest of the cast, yeah, I agree, did not. I was hoping for Garak, but you know.
But what do you, Taylor, what do you think of the kind of the aesthetic look that they're going for with, say, let's start with the uniforms?
Oh, I love the uniforms. They definitely are, they're very reminiscent of, like, Earth fascism, I guess we can,
right.
You know, that fascist chic that they kind of have going on. They're very ornate, which is interesting, you know, as well, because mm-hmm. they have an emperor, right? You know, I figure that lends to a certain level of ornament and glitz, you know.
Right.
It's like cool kind of armor that they're actually waltzing around in. I don't know how practical it is if, mm-hmm. you know, at the end of the day, you just got to take your armor off because you're sweating profusely.
Right.
But, I think it looks gorgeous. The highlight to me, though, is the Terran Empire symbol.
Yes.
It's always been that sword going through the planet Earth, but then they actually turn that sword into an upside-down Starfleet insignia, which I thought was just absolutely genius. Cam, what do you think of the aesthetics?
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was interesting to make the outfits look so kind of like armor, basically, because it does split from what we've seen, obviously, in the original series. As well as Enterprise, which they looked fairly similar to the, you know, Prime Universe. Like, there wasn't this radical shift, whereas this was definitely a radical shift. And, I mean, I guess that goes hand in hand with what Discovery's done so far with uniforms and ships and all that sort of stuff. But I liked it. It looked great.
You definitely still see the continuity between the two universes, which I totally appreciate there as well. I'm kind of disappointed, though, that none of the counterparts we've encountered at this point, well, none of them have a goatee. And
who's the most likely to have a goatee? Let's take a vote.
I say Admiral Terrell, the Vulcan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yep.
Yeah, you got to imagine.
But would he wouldn't be an admiral in this situation.
He'd be a rebel. Of course, in this mirror universe, there's Vulcan and Andorian rebels, essentially anybody who's non-human. It looks like they're trying to quell some rebellions going on right now, mm-hmm. which is kind of an interesting... Maybe we can dive into that little plot point and maybe how it's not necessarily 100% congruous with continuity, because I'm a continuity nerd at some point.
Of course.
But, Cam, goatee.
Oh, here's the question. Yeah. Or does Dr. Culbert not have a goatee? Is that the twist? They do the reverse.
I never even thought about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to say the reverse.
Reverse goatee.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Taylor, where do you stand? And who's most likely to have a goatee in this universe?
One of the female characters.
That'd be pretty badass.
Yes.
We know it's not Captain Killy.
No.
Though
I do love her haircut.
Oh, she looks gorgeous in that. But just as her mother, which is interesting, her mother would have always loved this look on Tilly.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I would love to meet Captain Tilly's mom, though.
Yeah. Her mom was punk rock, and her mom, and she's... She rebelled against that by being kind of bookish. I don't know.
I dig. We even get like the look of the Discoveries updated. They have like the insignia, the new Terran Empire insignia throughout the ship. Yeah. We have the ISS Discovery, which is, I don't know. I dig the fact that they're going through all this effort. It seems like a lot of effort on the part of the crew to disguise themselves,
but
right?
This was something we've never seen before, which is like a crew making over the ship to blend into the mirror universe. I love that.
Makeover. I thought that was great, actually. I think this is the first time where we've crossed over into the mirror universe and they've actually like shown the world around it and like kind of how it is and how it's sort of laid out. I mean, we've gone into the mirror universe before, but it's a very like contained episode happening in like a station where they're like going and exploring and encountering new ships and stuff like that. I think that is really cool. And I just want to say, I have a background in graphic design.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So I loved the new insignia. I thought it was so cool.
I was totally geeking out at it.
I was like, okay, I'm into this now.
Yeah.
Terran Empire, yes. Yay.
For the record, Taylor's a fascist. Right. So.
No!
Do we want to maybe a little bit of supposition on our parts? Again, Cam, you and I, we're both quite spoiler-averse, so we're not digging things up and sharing it. But the identity of the Emperor is being concealed at this point.
Yes.
What do we make of that, Cameron? Taylor, any theories?
Can you refresh my memory who the Emperor is?
Well, we've only met one Emperor so far. That was Hoshi Sato in A Mirror Darkly.
Yes.
And I guess they're kind of, it's their version of Snoke, you know, kind of their supreme leader.
Goes out like a chump.
They're keeping that concealed, but it's curious, like in this timeline, is it set enough in the future where Hoshi Sato would be dead?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
So, so is this like
plus? What do you think the life expectancy is?
Oh yeah,
in the mirror
emperors.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I wouldn't necessarily expect this to be like the descendant of Hoshi Sato, like just who's ever able to take over. Because Hoshi had the Constitution class vessel by the end of it, and that's why she was able to take over as emperor.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which, we do get the. Why don't we go over to the talk about the Defiant a little bit later, because Cam, I want to ask you, any theories about who the Emperor would be in this universe?
Yeah, it's gonna be Giorgio. Yeah. I'm gonna call it right now.
Pretty much.
Oh, that, yeah.
That's what I figured. Yep. Yeah. So, because I think they've been looking at every reason they can to bring back.
If you've got Michelle Yeoh, you want to give her juicy stuff to do. This is a perfect opportunity.
And just from a storytelling script perspective, we do have that moment where, which in retrospect is pretty funny, when Burnham's talking about how it's going to be weird seeing like passed away comrades, and the first one she sees is Connor, and she's just all
and the audience
up.
Is like, who's that?
Yeah, exactly. Well, they literally had to go do a flashback because nobody remembered who
and
Connor
she had to
was.
Explain who he was.
Yeah.
As well.
So I just think that they're trying to build up to her having to confront this mirror universe Giorgio. So I think that's gonna plant some seeds for some pretty cool. Like
some pretty good storytelling. I didn't pop into my brain immediately when they're like, oh, this mystery emperor.
And right.
Like, who could it be? But yes, that makes the most sense. It would be cool to like have a different callback as well. But
I would love to see Hoshi Sato alive for some reason.
And I debated it, whether they would return to the Mirror Universe quickly on.
What episode was that? Do you remember?
I think it was like, will we go, Discovery go to the universe.
Yeah. I'll post a link to that in the podcast blog. But I would love to see Linda Park come back as the Empress, but I just feel like there's no way they'd bring back
character. No.
She could have been in a cryo chamber for, get 100 years.
But I mean, had like the original series, well, not the original series, but had been like TNG been set before Discovery, I could see them bringing back a TNG cast member. They're not going to bring back an Enterprise cast member.
No,
unless
maybe
it's Archer in some sort of video monitor or something, but I think other than that, no.
Okay.
I would also like to see, they mentioned earlier the rebellion that they're causing with Vulcans and Andorians. I'm like, maybe we will actually see an Andorian. My fingers are so crossed.
Okay.
It has not happened.
Cam and I, we've just been complaining about how they're just teasing us so much about the sight of an Andorian, because we don't know yet if we're going to get the practical effects for the antenna.
Oh, I hope so.
Or if it's going to be like CG, which we both fear that's going to be the case. We don't want CG antenna. We want like practical
but
antenna.
Considering how much they're caking makeup on the actors they already have, practical effects seems likely.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I do. Yeah.
I'm not optimistic on that front. I am with you two in wanting it, but I don't think it's going to happen.
So my biggest disappointment with the Mirror Shenzhou is no sight of Daft Punk. And that just broke me up.
That's true.
You know, I guess it proves that the theory that Daft Punk was an alien just using cybernetic enhancements. So I thought maybe Daft Punk was maybe a human with the cyborg helmet on. Mm-hmm. So it is quite disappointing that there's no Daft Punk here, because it's just such a mysterious character. I think before Arium, there's just all this mythology building up around Daft Punk. And, well, we just don't get any more into that at this point. Maybe season two, we can hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Hopefully.
So, guys, I think this is an intriguing journey into the Mirror Universe, because we've had the transporter function as a gateway in the original series as well as Deep Space Nine, and we had kind of the Tholian web / Inimir Darkly. We saw the connections between those two universes with regards to bringing the USS Defiant back through time and into a parallel universe. Now we have this with the Spore Drive. Do you think it was kind of important that they don't keep just falling back on maybe the transporter malfunctions? Or how important was it to you, Taylor, maybe that they're trying to do something new with the Mirror Universe here?
I think when it comes to the sort of mythology that they're building around the Spore Drive, I think it makes sense to that, like, in the grand scheme of things, that it would be connected to the other universes as well as, like, I mean, if you have this network that's branching, like, why wouldn't it go into the other universes? So we could have all the transporter malfunctions and et cetera, but, like, I think out of all the other options, since we have this like magical mushroom propulsion system that's, you know, ever pervasive throughout the universe, I think it makes the most sense that it would be connected to other universes as well.
True story. Star Trek Magic Mushroom was the working title of Discovery. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But Cam, I don't know, just from like a storytelling perspective, do you think it mattered that they wanted to kind of find a different way into the Mirror Universe, or is it just any excuse to get in that's kind of fun for the writers?
Well, I think it gives them a really good reason to outlaw Spore Drive technology at the end of season one.
Yeah, because I think that's been the debate, Taylor, is that we clearly see this amazing Spore Drive that is not being used by Captain Picard and crew 100 years from now. Yeah. So why is that? What happens to it? And I think maybe this is kind of what they're hinting at here. It's too volatile, especially when we see what it's doing to one Paul Stamets. And why don't we talk a little bit about his love life right now?
Oh,
and
dear.
That's Taylor. Taylor. Dr. Hugh Culber's gone. What's your initial reaction to this? For those who can't see her, Taylor's just crushed right now.
Staring off wistfully.
Yeah.
I love them. They were so cute. I was talking to a coworker of mine who, we've done a podcast of the Stormcrow, and we're often talking about like various queer issues and stuff like this and putting in the context of like sci-fi, and we did a great one about, you know, Sailor Moon, Steven Universe, talking about that stuff, but it always comes up. He was saying that he's like, you know what? I love this couple. It's great. You know, they didn't like make either of them like hetero presenting that, you know, they embrace that about this couple.
I mean, like, it wasn't like Sulu in the Kelvinverse where like he pats his lover on the back, like that's their acknowledgement,
like,
of a relationship.
Oh, there's like, yeah, they're super gay, like that, like they're sort of acknowledging in a way that there's like a spectrum of people who identify as different sexualities. It's not just like one person, or like the only way we can make this presentable for a larger audience that is heteronormative is by making the characters more heteronormative. So I loved that as well. But also, there's also this trope in many TV shows that something will happen to that gay couple where somebody dies. And especially lesbian couples. But I'm like, why can they not just end up happy together? And then so I was just broken. I was like, no, they did it again. I got my hopes up.
Cam and I had been discussing how we're not so sure how long Stamets is going to be lasting, especially when, you know, he gave that speech like, this is my last jump ever. And that it's kind of like that cop retirement speech you hear in like every single movie.
Didn't Goose give a speech like that in Top Gun?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's my last day on the force, guys.
Yeah. And then so we're kind of pondering, well, if Stamets is gone, maybe that's going to open up, you know, a lot more Hugh Culber stories.
Right.
Nope. Nope. Don't think so.
That's the end of him.
It was kind of crushing. I think out of
it was crushing.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, skull crushing.
Yeah.
Taylor's
spinal
still,
cord crushing.
Yeah.
My heart crushing.
But I don't want to just kind of gloss over the fact that this character is dead, because I out of the deaths that we have seen so far in the series, I think this is probably the one that probably kind of hit me the most versus like. No offense to one Captain Connor, that didn't really blow me away. But I don't know. I like Culber as a character. He seemed like an actual kind of relatable human being.
Yeah, I was really hoping he'd be a series regular in season two and the chief medical officer.
And he's met a very unceremonious end, and it's not like a death that I think. Well, I don't know. Like, I don't know how they're going to address it further. But it seemed as if instead of like. Cutting to like the next act, like or a commercial, they just cut to another scene. So I don't know if the writers really took time to acknowledge kind of the, I guess, depth to that moment, which a little problematic.
It was
problematic.
Very quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So are we to assume that Ash Tyler also, as soon as he's found out, he has to kill the person that's found out? Is that like a programmed thing?
I think there's... Well, why don't we get into
Ash Tyler
discussion? Anyways, it was absolutely... Because I was just like, we just jumped, and it was just like, I guess I'm killing you now.
Yeah, the Ash Tyler stuff, I guess, paid off even more this week, where he encountered Laurel, who... was definitely kind of seducing him and trying to basically jog his memory with a programmed phrase, and it did not work, but he was obviously having a bit of a meltdown afterwards.
Yeah.
And then he kills Dr. Culber. So the question is now...
why were his femurs shortened, his spinal cord shortened, his organs replaced? Why did...
Are we still pretending that fan theory is not
perhaps
true?
Okay, so let's kind of... Taylor, what do you think's going on here with one guy named Tyler who speaks Klingon when a trigger is given?
Yeah, it's so strange because it's like, you know, you're thinking he's like, most of the time they've said, oh, it's that original Klingon who's been augmented. But then, I don't know, like, where did they get his human organs from? Or like, how can you disguise
you
a Klingon organ to look like a human organ? And just like, so I'm a bit confused by that because, you know, wouldn't he have... Like, don't Klingons have an extra lung or something like this? So it is, you know, so I'm like, are they cutting him? Or did they augment him, or did they augment the original Ash Tyler and like impose this other personality over him?
Yeah.
So,
well, we do know, like, Arn Darvin, for example, the Klingon disguised as a human in Trials and, or wait, no, The Trouble with Tribbles.
Yes,
right.
Yeah.
There's so many Tribble episodes I get mixed up. And by so many, too.
Two. Yeah.
Yeah. But he had the, like, McCoy did the scan on him and said, this man's a Klingon.
Right.
So they did not go through that much to, I guess, more than just kind of the cosmetic stuff.
Right.
So, but I mean, are we just kind of acknowledging the fact that it looks like Tyler and Volk are the same dude? Is that kind of out there?
I mean, it seems like it.
I mean, I don't know what else it could be, unless this is like the worst misdirect ever. It's just, so it just, okay, but let's talk about this from a storytelling perspective, in that we've kind of been strung along with this ever since the introduction of Ash Tyler, and I'm wondering,
right,
from your guys' perspectives, if this storyline with Tyler is working for you.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
is Tyler an interesting character to you?
Yes and no, I guess, because he's, I don't know, even if he is programmed, he seems to be like grappling with that programming in an interesting way. So I guess, like, if it was like cut and dry and he just, oh, you know what? I remembered I was a Klingon and just like went on his way on his like, but he's like very much involved and invested in his relationship with
Michael Burnham.
Michael,
yeah.
Burnham. Well, sorry.
Let's talk about that conversation.
Total brain fart.
But that conversation that they had in the captain's quarters on the Mirror Universe Shenzhou, I thought that was like a very, very important conversation that those two shared, in which he said, no matter what happens, I will protect you. He almost kind of mirrored that Volk Laurel speech or conversation way back in, was it Choose Your Pain?
I think it's The Butcher's Knife, because he's gone at the end of that episode.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, so in that she was saying, I will be your champion no matter what. And Burnham reciprocates. She's right. Same to you. Like, and they have each other's backs. I think part of it is, There's obviously going to be a reveal that this guy is not exactly who he seems. And I think that's going to be a real punch in the gut for Burnham. So,
oh, for sure.
So it's like, how do they, when push comes to shove, how are these two people really going to deal with the continued tension that this creates? Which I think it's setting up like a really, something that has a lot of potential for a good storytelling moment.
Yeah.
But it's taken kind of a long time, and I think most fans have kind of figured it out, like the whole Volk Tyler thing.
Volk disappears, this new guy shows up.
In the very next episode, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, okay.
Probably this actor doesn't exist or does exist, and there's a lot of that, like a lot of misdirection. You're like, and I think they did a good job of that on the first episode, where they had us all believing Discovery was going to be an entirely different series than what it actually ultimately turned out to be.
Right.
And I thought that was great, but I think this has been a harder secret to hide. So, like, yeah, go grinding it out a little bit, like drawing us along and kind of, you know, seeing all his PTSD flashbacks. It's still interesting, though, when he does have those flashbacks, he is human, which is interesting. And I also find it interesting that, like, if push comes to shove, like, where his loyalties will end up lying. I mean, there'll probably be, like, a choose-your-adventure situation, like Michael Burnham or Laurel, you know, and see sort of what happens there.
Yeah,
or
sort
maybe
of a weird triangle there.
A new throuple.
Oh, yeah.
Taylor, did you ever watch Battlestar Galactica, like the new version?
No.
Okay.
I've tried to get into that,
and
I found it a little bit crunchy.
Mm-hmm. I'll just say that there are similar storylines going on where some people have identities, like there's sleeper agents essentially.
Yes, and I do know about that. Like I've read enough about Battlestar Galactica.
I think the sleeper agent storyline lays a lot of potential for internal character conflict, which is good. I just don't know if this has been executed in the best fashion, especially since everybody kind of caught on to this so-called plot twist very early on following the introduction of Tyler.
I mean, it's tough to say because we haven't seen where they can take it, because if he figures out maybe what's going on, then we might get some really compelling character stuff out of it. We just haven't gotten a lot out of Ash Tyler. We've gotten a lot of vagaries that weren't really that compelling.
A lot of sweating and shaking.
A lot of sweating, yeah.
A lot of flashbacks. And I kind of like, I find it interesting that they are going there, like showing these, like he's been abused, and they're showing it from like not a female male perspective, like it's a female person doing the abuse. Mm-hmm. And then I think that's an interesting story that does need to be told. But yeah, I think, yeah, this is a bit of an interesting late reveal. And
yeah. I am really liking, though, that it's giving Marie Chiafo a lot to do as Laurel on screen, because I think she's so compelling. Like, mm-hmm. I just love watching the scenes between the two of them, mm-hmm. because Ash Tyler's a character who's often a bit blank, but I find, like, when you pair those two up, you really get some, like, big fireworks.
Yeah. Guys, why don't we talk a little bit about this rebellion that they're trying to quell in this mirror universe, because...
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, what I think they established in Deep Space Nine is that mirror universe Spock was the one that kind of brought down the Terran Empire, and that's why the Klingon-Cardassian Union sort of took over. But this takes place about 10 years before Mirror Universe Spock would have encountered those other Prime Universe people.
Correct, yeah.
So I am kind of wondering how this works into it, or should we just assume that there's always been kind of rebellions going on ever since the Terran Empire came to power?
I don't think it's ever quiet in the Mirror Universe.
No.
I think there's always battles going on.
Do you think that the Terran Empire just kind of almost craves these rebellions to a certain degree, gives them kind of something to do?
I mean, they have to seem evil somehow.
Yeah.
I mean, if they are evil and lackadaisical, that doesn't really lend to a lot of storytelling. I mean, like the idea that they, you know, people would rebel. I mean, we can see that in our own history. People were just like, sweet, this is just happening to us. You know, we do have...
It's kind of,
you know,
like...
It's within the nature of beings to want to rebel and live and prosper and etc.
Definitely. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, the Star Wars. The Trade Federation becomes the Empire, becomes the First Order. It's like, I feel like that's the way the Mirror Universe goes. Whichever generation, they have different power structures. So, but they're all like that battle between, you know, the rebels and the greater, you know, whatever, fascist force.
Are you trying to tell me that we're soon going to find out that Starfleet officers are really just tax collectors?
Cam? That would be amazing. Like, they're putting up embargoes.
Yeah.
That'd be fascinating. Roger, roger.
But I think we're still craving to see that Andorian. But what we did see back in A Mirror Darkly, though, is that the aliens that were serving aboard the NX-01, they were definitely kind of second-class citizens. And now we don't see any aliens serving aboard the Discovery at all, which makes me wonder what, say, Saru is up to in the Mirror Universe.
Yeah, or Arium, yeah.
Yeah, so would somebody like Saru be involved from the rebellion, or is he just kind of running away from it, or is he the very opposite in that we debated this, Cam, whether maybe Saru would be more of a predator in the Mirror Universe?
I don't know, because Mirror Universe Spock still has the basic attributes of a Vulcan. I don't think that like Saru's race would be the opposite. I think they would be the same. I don't think he'd be a predator.
Yeah, but then what do you think kind of Saru's personality
is
like?
Personality would be different,
yeah,
but I think he would still have the same biological makeup.
Okay. Those threat ganglia would still spring forth.
Yeah.
Notice like, his threat ganglia was going off right before Ash Tyler came onto the bridge at the very beginning of the episode, after he had that encounter with Laurel.
I'm just waiting for Ash Tyler to encounter that tribble in Lorca's office. That I tell you, that is Chekhov's gun right there.
Okay.
But no, I mean, do you think, what role do you think Saru would play in this? Because we're going to see Mirror Universe Saru.
Yeah. And he's obviously... I don't know. Like, I think he's going to be like some guy who's on the run to a certain degree. You know, like maybe somebody who's trying to stay away from all the action. I don't think he wants to get involved with the rebellion. Although
he's like Humphrey Bogart in Casablanca.
Yeah.
Who's playing the piano?
Maybe it's Arium.
Oh, okay,
I'd have to leave. So still no sign of Milton Richter. He's been absent ever since Magic.
He's actually the Emperor.
That would be amazing if Milton Richter is the Emperor here. Yeah, so the Agonizer, guys, would you ever want to try one of those out just for kicks?
No, I'm good.
No, yeah, I'm good. I think it's pretty interesting, though. It's like, yeah, let's just jump over to the Mirror Universe.
Yeah.
And he's just making so many shady decisions. I feel like this is a bit of a comeuppance.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Was the Agonizer referenced in Mirror Mirror? I know we saw it for sure in A Mirror Darkly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But was it ever referenced before that?
I think it was.
Yeah, maybe in the DS9 one.
I think maybe even in Mirror Mirror it was.
Okay.
I don't think in Deep Space Nine it was.
Okay.
Though,
but... Okay, fair enough. But I like those boxes, and I look forward to seeing Landry show up, because if anyone is going to run Agonizer booths, it's Landry.
Okay. Yeah. So where would Landry be at this point, though? Because she got scooped up by one Lorca.
Yeah.
From a different ship, and then he was the one who assigned her to Discovery. So I can under... So Mir Landry could still be out and about, because what we do find out here is that the actual Mir Universe Discovery switched places with the Prime Universe Discovery. So it's now... I would be fascinated to see what they're up to in the Prime Universe right now in the midst of this war, and how Starfleet... is tackling it. Is this just going to remain a mystery for now?
No. What if they're they like get back to the universe and that Discovery's caused a lot of damage, and maybe that's why, you know, the whole... I mean, other than like the disastrous failure of like the what they're doing has been successful, but the means have been very unethical, and you know, who knows? Maybe that's why they deny, like they don't talk about Discovery. Maybe that's why it's been so top secret classified, or. Who knows? I'm so unsure. Like, that would be presented in a universe where everybody's like peaceful, and your ships are full of aliens that they're really not stoked on. So maybe they just go in guns firing.
Now we have six episodes, or I guess five episodes left, and this is obviously going to be an arc in the Mirror Universe.
Yeah.
Could we see an episode entirely on the Mirror Universe Discovery?
I would be fascinated by that. I just wonder if the episode number is, the remaining number of episodes, a bit of a constraint at this point, and then they may not want to devote
How many episodes do you think we have of this Mirror Universe?
I would have to say at least two more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would hope maybe more, because, well, why don't we talk about this fact? One of our bigger complaints, Cam, I think, about Discovery is that it hasn't been a lot of fun throughout a lot of it. We loved Magic.
Which is the really fun episode.
And that's the funnest episode.
And I think CV Pack and Parabellum was just a blast. Like, we were laughing our heads off for an hour straight. Yeah.
Watching Saru run, that swept me off my feet.
But yeah, you've had like isolated moments of fun, but we haven't had a lot of kind of that high-spirited sort of more like original series kind of spirit to it.
But I think this has a lot of potential. Looking at Tilly in the captain's seat, telling the captain of the other ship, hold your horses, or what the heck, you know,
heck,
like
hell,
that's fun.
Heck.
Yeah.
And it paid off really nice. That moment, when Stamets came out of the spore drive and looked at Tilly and said, captain.
Yeah. So yeah. Okay. I totally forgot about that.
No one else made that connection.
Oh,
yeah. He was getting glimpses into this Mirror Universe.
So is he somehow in some sort of state where he's like minorly omniscient, that he can like see what's sort of happening?
Yeah. Is there some sort of blending between the two Stamets's?
I think that's like his brain's been kind of going back and forth between different universes. You know? And it could go beyond just, say, this Mirror Universe, because an episode like Star Trek The Next Generation's Parallels, I mean, it obviously establishes that there's all these variations of parallel universe, kind of a sliding door situation. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think the Mirror Universe and the Prime Universe are connected in a way that goes beyond just these other parallel universes that could potentially exist here.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the fun factor goes, there's just stuff like Lorca doing the Scottish accents. I'm sure Jason Isaacs had a blast giving us a little bit of an homage to One Montgomery Scott, for a little bit. I think there's like so much potential to have a lot of fun with this arc, which means I don't want it to end next episode. I think... I don't know, Cam, what do you think the chances are that they, I don't know, end up closing out at least to the penultimate episode, just doing this arc for, I guess, what, four episodes before they go back?
I could see that.
I could see that as well.
It seems pretty likely. Like the climax of this part of the season could be them getting back to the universe and seeing some havoc, or like coming into a ceasefire. We don't know what they're going to be walking into, but I could see like them getting there. That could be like, if it was three episodes and there's two episodes left of them doing what after that? Like, we got to get Starfleet our information about how to find the way through the cloak.
So maybe going back to what you're talking about earlier, Cam, is what we can really do with this universe. I think... Yeah, maybe four episodes would be, I'd be fine with that. And it will, with regards to kind of going back to the Prime Universe, seeing the ISS Discovery crew.
Right.
I would be down for like flashes back and forth. I just don't know if they would do an entire episode in the Prime Universe.
I do wonder though, like, just how much business is there in terms of the Prime Universe? To kind of wrap up the arc of a season one.
Well, and Taylor, I don't know how you feel, but Cam and I, we have talked a little bit on the podcast about, while we love the characters and there's been some standout episodes, we haven't really been all that invested in this Klingon war arc. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think this storytelling has been the strength of this series, but I think that there's some good potential for this Mirror Universe arc to be much better. I'd much rather hang out in the Mirror Universe than go back and deal with the cloaking coordinates or whatever they need
to
get back.
Like, I was gonna say that, as you know, I would have to agree with you on that. Like, that's not as interesting. Like, I'm not as invested in the war, like, because we kind of, I feel like we kind of know that what's happening with that. So maybe the Mirror Universe could have some more interesting storytelling rather than the war. Compared to, like, maybe, you know, with the Dominion War, if we had to compare it to anything, where everybody was very heavily invested, they had a lot of really cool episodes to deal with that, I think, and that was, like, more of a looming threat.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah, whereas this is like, oh, the Klingons are just straight up attacking, they're just really aggressive, this is just what they're about, et cetera, et cetera.
And, I mean, Cole is dead, Voke, I think we know where Voke is,
yeah.
Laurel's in a cell on the Discovery, like, there's no outstanding Klingon characters even to deal with?
There is.
Who do we have left?
Danas.
Oh, yeah.
She's the one with the jewelry on her face.
Oh, of course,
She's a very, maybe leading the Klingons right now.
Sure, but that's not a particularly interesting character that we need, that there's, like, a real need to pay off.
Well, there's some Dinesh fandom out there, Cam.
I'm sure there is. There's the fan of every character.
I mean, we
fly the flag for Vedic Barayal. There's someone out there for every character. So, you know.
I was going to say, do they ever discuss, like, the house names of each, like, the characters that they have now? Like, Voke didn't have a house, but what Laurel did, do we know her house name?
We do. What?
Cam, I can't remember what it was. Yeah. She did name it, though, it was like the House of
Spies and Deceivers or something like that.
Well, wouldn't it be funny if they were the Duress?
That'd be all right.
We've definitely kind of never actually said that could be the name, but we kicked back and forth that. There was sort of a bit of a similarity between the Durasses and Laurel.
Because there's a lot of people on the internet who will state that the Klingons that we're seeing right now, the ones that are into deception and all that, they're nothing like the Klingons I know from Star Trek The Next Generation. All you have to write in response on Facebook is Duras. You know?
Yes,
and then that'll shut people down. Yeah.
Yep.
But, okay. So I'm going to say 3 episodes. I don't think they're going to do 4. I think they want to do the final 2 episodes in the Prime Universe. I think we'll get 3 episodes here.
Yeah.
And first one in, I really love how they've kind of set everything up. And it was a fun episode. You can tell that this is not the conclusion to something, but the beginning of something. And so I'm down to see where they take it from here.
And we should say, this was the return to Star Trek for Jonathan Frakes, who directed this episode. And you know, he's been on the press tour, really hyping this episode.
Well, how technically competent was his directing, in your opinion?
Oh, it was technically competent.
Yes, it was. We like Frakes.
Yeah.
And I think we've said on the podcast, he's a perfectly fine director. We just don't know if he's, like, kind of a visionary director.
I'm going to say he's not a visionary. I'll just go right on the record now and say he's not.
But the movies he's directed.
Thunderbirds.
The Thunderbirds.
Yeah. Yeah. Clockstoppers.
But I'll say this. Like, he brought us, he's introducing us to this Mirror Universe, and all we did was kind of praise kind of the look and the aesthetics of it. So I think credit goes to what he was able to bring to it and bring to the actors, because from everything people say about Frakes is he's really good dealing with actors and telling them, like, how to kind of get to where they need to be emotionally.
I was getting a little concerned, like, the first half of the episode. I'm like, did they really just get Jonathan Frakes to do a bottle episode? Like, it didn't seem like there was a lot of, like, really exciting stuff for him to do. But then, of course, we get to see the entry into the Mirror Universe. So it's like, okay,
right,
this was worth it.
Yeah.
Because I thought it would have been a little embarrassing if they were really hyping a Jonathan Frakes episode and it was like, yep, it was really just setting up, a new arc.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Well, I remember Ronald D. Moore, former writer on Star Trek, he had announced that he was directing his very first episode of television ever. This was for Battlestar Galactica. And I watched the episode. I was like, yeah.
Right.
It took place entirely on a ship. It was kind of very forgettable. And it's better if, the directors can have fun, play around. And I think the Mirror Universe is kind of the perfect opportunity to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Cam, you brought up the fact that he's on the press tour right now.
Yeah.
Any tidbits that we should know about?
I think the most interesting thing he said was he was just talking about, like, the visual design of doing this show versus the Orville. And he was saying basically on the Orville, he shot it like TNG.
Yeah.
Like he was, you know, the camera setups, everything was very traditional TNG, where he said this one, it was JJ Star Trek. Like they, there was a lot of cranes.
Dutch angles.
Yeah. And like just the, making it look much more cinematic.
Lens flare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can definitely see that in the series for sure.
Definitely.
That's definitely inspired by the other universes. Yeah.
So does this...
the Kelvin universe?
Yeah. Kelvin universe. Yeah. Yeah. Do you recall when we found out that JJ was not going to be coming on to Star Trek Beyond, and there is the Bring Back Riker campaign?
Oh,
and
the most tragic campaign of all. Although you tried to launch one that was more tragic.
Yeah, hashtag Bring Back B'Elanna.
Yeah.
That didn't really produce much. But I guess now we're prepping Jonathan Frakes for how to shoot the JJ universe. We don't have a director yet. Do you think Frakes could take over from Quentin Tarantino, Cam, if that's what happens?
Oh, obviously.
Okay. Frakes, Tarantino, pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like it. I like it. Guys, I want to go back to this. So we got our first glimpse of what a Constitution class starship might look like in this universe. And it's not exactly the same as we know it from the prime.
I'm outraged.
Are you?
No.
We saw kind of that grid of what the USS Defiant looks like.
Yeah.
And there are differences, especially with the nacelles. I noticed that the most. And a little bit of the saucer and the body. I think the dimensions are just a little bit different. We were talking about whether or not we would be down for a bit of a visual reboot of the Constitution. I'm fine with what we're seeing so far.
I didn't catch the details of it probably as closely as you did. You're much more of a ship guy than I am.
You're a guy.
I take them all for granted.
I love the high seas, man.
But did it look at all similar to you to like the J.J. Abrams, the Kelvinverse, Enterprise?
No, it looked kind of distinct from that. I mean, there's only so much you can do with regards to the shape of, you know, that design.
Right.
You know, and this just looked like their own kind of take. It looked, I would say, closer to what we see in the current universe, or the prime universe with Mir. Cam, before we wrap up, anything you want to highlight? Any final thoughts here?
Yeah, let's talk about the elevator fight
with
Captain Connor, because, you know, I find Discovery, like a lot of TV shows, have sometimes iffy fight choreography.
Double-fisted punch.
Yeah.
Nonstop.
I mean, I would say, like, in the Battle of the Binary Stars, like, the fist fight with the... The Klingons there was a little iffy between Georgiou and Burnham.
But
I thought the one in Into the Forest I Go was actually really strong against Cole. What did you guys think of the elevator fight?
The best part to me was when she kicked the gravity controller and they just like floated up and then hit the ground. It's Star Trek actually trying to do something visually interesting in a fight sequence, which we really haven't gotten in the previous 430 some odd episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So I dig it. It's anything to kind of make it look a little different than usual, because I can't tell you, Taylor, if I see another double-fisted punch again. I'm going through my Star Trek Next Gen rewatch right now, and I just saw another double-fisted punch today. And I was just like, okay.
Yeah, I was going to say that the one thing I really liked about that scene is when the gravity gets lost and he's disoriented and she knows exactly what's going on.
Yeah,
I really liked that characterization where they just have heard. She's just like, this is exactly what's going to happen. I know this because I'm the one who did it. She's calculating everything sort of in her mind. And I was like, oh man, that is great. That is like a very small instant, but you're like, she's got this.
Pretty badass way to make an entrance on the bridge after retaking command of your vessel.
Yeah, and I like that when she killed him, like she looked severely upset by it too, and had to get herself back together. This elevator fight actually reminded me of Captain America 2, Winter Soldier, with the big fight on the elevator.
Yeah.
As well as the Bond movie Diamonds Are Forever, where Bond has the fight with, I think, Peter Franks on this elevator where it's covered in glass and they're smashing the glass.
Okay.
But it's like this close quarters fight where there's like that much more desperation to it because you're in such confined quarters.
Should we give Frakes a little bit more props than we were giving him earlier just for being able to...
I think this was actually really well done. Like, it was memorable, and it, like you guys said, you know, it had that beat of the gravity that made it, like, it made it memorable. It wasn't just, like, a fist fight in an elevator, someone got stabbed, and that was the end of it. It gave you a little bit of a, sort of a beat to it that was memorable, and I think we'll remember.
Yeah, I mean, we can kind of poke fun at Frakes, but I think he did a good job in trying to capture the aesthetic that has been already established and doing interesting things. And I like what he kind of brought, that little bit of extra comedy to it with the characters. You know, I think they seemed a little bit more seemed less plastic or less static. They definitely seemed a little bit more fleshed out with their emotional, whatever, their portrayals.
Yeah.
Right.
Words.
Do you think we'll see any other Star Trek alumni coming to direct episodes of Discovery?
I think the one who probably has the biggest shot is Roxanne Dawson. Although Roxanne Dawson, she's really in demand, though. Like, she's directing episodes of HBO series. Mm-hmm. So it actually, this might be below her. To a certain degree, but I don't think so. I think she would come back and do it because she's playing with a pretty big budget. This is, I think, somewhere between $5 to $7 million an episode. I think she'd say yes to that.
Do you think LeVar Burton or Robert Duncan McNeil could have a shot?
No, because I think the Jonathan Frakes thing was mostly for publicity.
Right.
And I think if you want to get a Roxanne Dawson, she's actually like a very like well-regarded television director now. Like she does like high quality like cable series, whereas a LeVar Burton or a Robbie Duncan McNeil, they're more of kind of the second tier CW TV series direction that they're going to do.
But people love LeVar Burton.
Oh, that's
true.
Yeah.
And there is the question, like, would Frakes have gotten this had he not directed Insurrection and First Contact? Like, he's played with budgets, right? Like, he's familiar with a bigger production.
I still think he would have gotten it just because, like, how can you go wrong bringing back Jonathan Frakes to direct, though? It, just from a publicity standpoint.
When is Shatner going to direct an episode?
Oh.
Never.
I would totally watch the hell out of that episode.
It would be amazing. It would be like his These Are the Voyages.
Oh, God.
It would be the episode that would live in infamy.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. All right, guys. What, Cam, we have a little bit of a viewer mail that we want to deliver to our, well, our listeners. I call them viewers, but that's only because I'm trying to plug our YouTube videos. So every week, guys, just go to Subspace Transmissions YouTube, and Cam and I, we're posting videos every single week, and so we've got some Facebook message is from one Jason Kerr. This is on facebook.com/subspacepod. Like us there. Follow us there. It'll be great.
Yeah, this is on the link on our last episode, the best Star Trek spoofs. And he's had a question. He said, would you consider Andromeda an homage to Star Trek since Gene Roddenberry originally drafted it as a post-Federation story? That's an excellent question. Because in my mind, when I read this question, my immediate response was no, because Gene Roddenberry is involved. I feel like once the creator of the franchise is making the spinoff series, I don't really know if you're paying homage to yourself to a certain
like,
degree.
Would you consider like Star Trek Voyager an homage to Star Trek The Next Generation? Like,
no.
I wouldn't use the word homage. Like, to me, it's more like how a cop show... that, you know, Dragnet was around in the 1960s. I wouldn't call, say, The Shield an homage to Dragnet, even though they're both cop shows. It's in the same format as, say, Star Trek. Andromeda and Star Trek, the same kind of genre as well.
Mm-hmm.
I just wouldn't call it an homage the way that Galaxy Quest or Black Mirror's USS Callister is an obvious tribute and homage to Star Trek.
And to me, it's a creator kind of playing in the sandbox they know and love. It's kind of like, you know, Stan Lee creating all these superheroes who have sort of similar kind of psychological backgrounds. But, he, you know, like Spider-Man is not an homage to the Hulk.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's, and that to me is like Roddenberry at a certain point really was only getting work doing like, you know, sci-fi TV shows. Like no one was hiring him to come up with other things other than Andromeda, Earth Final Conflict, shows like that.
But no, but those all, nobody was hiring him to do those either though. Like those are all things that he came up with in the 70s and nobody wanted. And
but
so then
think,
they unearthed it in the 90s
but
and
we
then
know
they
he,
produced it in the 90s after he had already passed
it's
away.
It's true, but we know that he was writing a lot of other pilots.
Yeah.
They were not digging those up. Like, the Questar tapes was not getting dug up.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like the ones similar to Star Trek were the two that were getting
through. They're getting digged up, or dug up, rather. I know how to... And words are hard for me, didn't it? You know, they're getting dug up because they're like, sweet, okay, we're still making money off Star Trek. How can we make more money off of Star Trek that isn't Star Trek?
Yeah, right. Oh, I know. We don't want those licensing fees that we'll have to pay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And when I think of homage, I think... they're like doing it fondly because they're fans.
Yeah.
I don't know that the people behind Andromeda were like really trying to capture the essence of, Star Trek.
Do you think Rod Roddenberry was involved with Andromeda back in the day?
I think he was.
Okay.
But
he would have been like 25 or maybe even younger.
How much do you really think he was doing though? I mean, it was probably more of a, like an honorary sign off.
Yeah. Yeah. So. How much do you think he's doing as an executive producer on Star Trek Discovery right now, Cam?
I think he's watching it week to week.
Okay. Same.
He exists. Yeah. His name is on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of names on the opening credits in terms of who has producer credit on the show.
I think honestly, like what he's doing largely is kind of going to the cons, raising awareness for it.
Yeah.
You know, keeping kind of the Roddenberry name in the conversation and like keeping the show kind of like he's kind of like the PR guy to a certain degree, taking it to the fans, being like, you know, we approve of this and we're on board with what we want to do. Like, I think that's mostly his job.
Yeah. Are there people who don't know about Star Trek Discovery yet? Is that sort of,
you know, I would say probably.
Saying, yeah. Like, I mean, you were just saying that, like, get it, getting the word out. And I'm like, well, Star Trek fans would know, but I guess it's kind of like bringing in a new generation of,
but also
viewers,
giving the, like the seal of approval, like saying like, guys,
the Roddenberry seal of approval.
Exactly. We
know
you're
concerned.
It's got space
stuff. We like it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, you know, trust us. It's coming from the Roddenberry side. Like, we're with it.
But that's also why I think they're bringing back people like Jonathan Frakes. It's like they really want Star Trek fans in their corner here, and that's why we're getting this sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. We'll have videos and the blogs will be back this week, tackling different elements of this latest Star Trek Discovery episode, Despite Yourself.
Yeah, I might write about the Mirror Universe. Who knows?
Spoiler.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Vulcan Rebel Smith.
You can find me at Reportin. That's REPORTON, as in Nanchurian candidate. Taylor, if we wanted to find you online, what can you plug for us here?
If you want to find me online, you can find me on Twitter at Pleasant Mountain, which is Pleasant, and then MTN, and you can find me on Facebook, or you can check out either of the Stormcrow pages, or we have a Stormcrow Eha, Stormcrow Tavern, and Stormcrow Manor, and I manage all of their social media. You can also find me there in person and occasionally on the Adventure EXE podcast as a guest.
Nice. For those who don't know, Stormcrow, kind of these bars here in Vancouver, you'd be comfortable calling like a nerd bar, Taylor?
Oh, yeah. We are a sports bar for nerds. We have two locations in Vancouver, and we're opening one Toronto in the spring.
We brought our good Star Trek friend Shelley Ross to Stormcrow on Commercial Drive a couple years ago, and she's just like blown away by just how cool it was there. So
she's has been raving about it for 2 years now, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. She says every time she wants, like, she's talking about maybe coming up to Vancouver again sometime in the spring, so we know what we're taking her there again. So.
Yeah, and all of our Vegas friends, when they eventually make it this way, they'll wind up there at some point. Yeah.
So, yeah, for all you non-Vancouverites, this is the place that you need to go to if you're also a listener of Subspace Transmissions.
Add that to your itinerary.
Excellent.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.